Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren. I want to welcome back Doug Wells. Took a hiatus last week to have some fun. And this is Mountain Money for Monday morning. And kind of a themed show in both halves. The first half will be about the business secrets of Trappist monks. One CEO's quest for meaning and authenticity. And this, Doug, is one of the more interesting business book authors we've had on in some time. Just the very subject. This is a gentleman, August Turek, who takes retreats at a Trappist monastery near his home. And over a lifetime of visiting with the Trappist monks has learned many things from them, including that they are great businessmen, and there is much to learn from a monastic society in the business world.
It's not your typical business book. I found myself highlighting a lot of phrases. They're really deep thoughts for a business book. I'll tease the audience with one right here, and that is one of the quotes in the book is, "The problem with life is it must be lived forward, but is it only understood backwards?"
Yeah,
so that,
boy,
is, that
could,
is some deep thinking right there.
If you
there.
Could reverse that, yes.
And it's so true, though, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And then we're going to switch gears, Larry. We're going to have Naomi Doyle in. She founded a company called Cade and Company in 2003, and they make handmade baby shoes and also handmade baby clothing based here in Park City. And then sticking with local businesses, we're going to have Amy McGar and Anna Francis in studio. They are the founders of Crafty Fun Moms. You've heard of the Beer of the Month Club, the Wine of the Month Club. This is kind of the Craft of the Month Club. So both very interesting conversations. You're going to want to stay tuned. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a minute.
This is Chris Robinson with Prudential Utah Real Estate, and we've been supporting KPCW since day one. Prudential Utah helps buyers and sellers with their home needs, whether it's a condo, single-family house, or undeveloped land. Our agents know our community and our local market. More information can be found at pru-utah.com.
Hello, I'm Dr. David Munday at Park City Urology, a part of the Intermountain Specialty Clinic. Did you know that one-third of all adults aged 30 to 70 experience loss of urinary control, but more than two-thirds never seek treatment? Park City Urology treats urinary incontinence through medications, minimally invasive outpatient procedures, and exercise regimens. If you have struggled with urinary incontinence, we at Park City Urology can help. 435-658-7470 or parkcityurology.org. The Intermountain Park City Specialty Clinic is a nonprofit organization.
Okay, welcome back to Mountain Money, and we have on the line with us August Turek, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, August, with that, but we were attracted to this book above the hundreds we screen here, Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, just because this is so far afield from your average business book. Welcome to Mountain Money.
I'm really glad to be with you guys. I have to start with my own first question, though. Is it really as beautiful in Park City as people say it is? Because I've never been there.
No, it's more beautiful. They're just saying it's only beautiful, so they'll scare people away. It's more than that.
I'm really glad to be with you guys.
Well, let me do a quick introduction of you. You received a BA in history from the University of Pittsburgh, and you're pursuing now a master's of theology at St. John's University in Minnesota, and so there's a spiritual side to you as well as the fact that you are in the software business and have founded a couple of successful companies, Raleigh Group International, RGI, and Elsinore Technologies. But you like to take retreats to one particular Trappist monastery. I should mention we have a similar monastery here in Utah in Huntsville, which is almost as beautiful as Park City, and that's the Abbey of Our Lady of the Holy Trinity, and they've been there since 1947, doing probably the same sorts of things that you talk about at Mepkin Abbey. So talk about this journey that keeps taking you back to the monastery that you visit?
Well, I started up way back in college with profound questions that I had about, you know, the typical college questions of what is the meaning of life? What is the purpose of life? Is there a God? What does he want from me if he is? Does exist, et cetera. And so I have had a long, it's probably been my main focus of, not probably, it has been, spirituality has been the main focus of my life. But actually in 1990, so I was coaching some college students at Duke University, non-denominationally, just on, you know, things like what is the purpose of life. And they talked me into going on a skydiving expedition, and I shattered my ankle, and this kicked off a kind of a midlife personal crisis. And that's what led me originally in 1996 to the Trappist Monastery of Mepkin down in South Carolina. And I found out that they actually have a program there called Monastic Guest Program, which goes beyond taking retreats. It means staying for a month or weeks at a time where you actually live. So you become a part-time monk. And you wear a robe yourself, and I've been returning there ever since. I spent 3 weeks, for example, over Christmas there this year.
That sounds like the best way to be a monk, part-time.
Yeah, you can leave when you want, right?
I like one, you know, you have so many good quotes in your book. You have one of the brothers that you worked with at the monastery that passed away, and you talk about your walk back with another of your friends that's a monk, and your friend said, everybody wants to die like a Trappist monk, but nobody wants to live like one.
Right,
and I think
that's
true.
Father Robert.
Yeah, I think that's very true, right? I mean, it's a tough life that these gentlemen are living. And the Trappist monk, my understanding is they're running a business. It sounds like the primary business is harvesting eggs. Can you tell us a little about that business aspect of their
lives? Well, they actually transitioned out of eggs a few years ago. Their main business now is growing exotic forms of mushrooms.
You know,
they went into the mushroom business. It's doing very well. Actually, it's more lucrative, I hear from the abbot, than eggs once were. But besides that, they also sell organic fertilizer. They have a gift shop, a conference center. They manage thousands of acres of renewable timber. And they actually have a columbarium, I think it is called, where so many people requested wanted to be buried at the monastery that they actually now allow people who have been cremated to find their final resting place there. So that has become, in a sense, a business as well.
So
that was what launched my quest, because as I was staying with them, I kept saying, how do these 70-year-old guys working 4 hours a day, mostly in silence, manage all these multi-million dollar businesses with such frictionless efficiency? And that, you know, because I'm an entrepreneur and I formerly was a corporate executive with companies like MTV, I couldn't help but start asking myself those kinds of questions as I spent longer and longer times with them.
Are you the only part-time monk that has worked at MTV?
if there is any other ones, we haven't crossed paths.
So give us some insights, all joking aside, give us some insights into their business decision-making process. And I think one that might be interesting is the situation with the eggs. I mean, they've been harvesting eggs for 300 years, right? And they decided to change their business model. What did that look like? What did the process look like?
Well, first of all, each monastery in the world comes up with their own business model. So in this case, the monks had only been, Mepkin had only been doing eggs for 20 or 30 years or something like that. They actually started out in 1949. I think they were actually raising cattle and had some agrarian. But according to the rule of St. Benedict, which manages all monasteries, the two principal things that underlie the monastic way of life are prayer and work, which in Latin are ora et labora, prayer and work. So part of that is they should work with their hands. It should be something which they're physically involved with. So as a form of exercise, and it also becomes a form of prayer for them as well. So they transitioned into mushrooms a few years ago, and I talk about it in my book because it was a journey of faith where they just kind of abandoned all the know-how that they had in the egg business and went on into mushrooms, and they backpedaled for a while. I understand that, you know, from talking to them, that they made a lot of rookie mistakes and blunders, but calling on one of the great monastic virtues, which is determination, consistency, sticking at it, having faith in the future, they have now turned the corner and they're doing very, very well with the business.
Yeah, let's talk about the guiding principles of Trappist monks and how they have led them to be successful businessmen. What is it about what they do inside a monastery in terms of spiritual sustenance that leads them to become proficient at business?
Well, in Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, the book, I point out early on that there was a quote in USA Today, the newspaper that looked into them as well some years ago. And it said, these monks break every rule in the book of Business 101 except attention to quality, and that may well be the secret to their success. And I said, let's take that in a bigger way than just quality products, which they are very famous for throughout the world. You know, Wall Street Journal said the best beer in the world is made by Trappist monks in Belgium. And I said, let's take this as a wider sense of a qualitative as opposed to a quantitative point of view on business. You know, ever since the early 1900s, a book came out, The Principles of Scientific Management. And ever since, we've been trying to turn business into a kind of a bloodless science. And the quantitative approach to business has taken us very far. I'm not against it at all, and neither are the monks. But in the shuffle, a lot of the qualitative aspects, values, principles, ethics, service, serving other people, love, and people have been lost in the shuffle a lot. And the monks are fanatically focused on these qualitative aspects of life, which then trickle down into the way they approach their business. And this, I think, is the real secret to their success in business.
Well, let's delve into that a little bit. So we all work in the traditional business world. What are two or three aspects of the Trappist monks' business philosophy that we could incorporate into our business lives to help us find our work more rewarding and also more successful?
Well, I have I introduce a concept in Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks called the transformational organization. And I say that the monastic tradition is a transformational organization. I also point to Alcoholics Anonymous, to the Marine Corps, to some corporate people that I, examples that I use, as well as my mentor, Lewis R. Mobley's IBM Executive School, which he founded in 1956 and ran till 66. And so what are the three things that a transformational organization has in common? First of all, it has a high overarching mission worthy of being selflessly served. The monks live to serve God and their fellow man. The Marines live to serve the country, the Corps, and their fellow Marine. The best way to stay clean and sober in AA is to serve other people so they stay clean and sober. And IBM's Executive School was built on the idea of serving customers and personal growth of your colleagues. So that was their high overarching mission, worthy of being selflessly served. The second point is that they offer an opportunity for transformation from selfishness to selflessness. So all of the transformational journeys we see in the movies that we love are of people being transformed and discovering that the real secret to life is being transformed from a selfish person into a selfless person. Think of Groundhog Day, for example. The third most thing is the offering a methodology for how to bring this transformational journey about. So it's called the novitiate in the monasteries. It's called boot camp in the Marines. It's called the 12-step program in AA. And Lou Mobley built a 12-week experiential learning process. So the counterintuitive fundamental principle to Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks is that we may think that we want selfishness, but we are all really longing for selflessness.
You know, and you write that the most important secret to Mepkin Abbey's business success is the rule of St. Benedict. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the rule of St. Benedict, the monastic tradition emerged back in the 6th century And Saint Benedict was one of the founders of the monastic tradition, or in the West he was the founder, and he came up with this thing called the Rule of Saint Benedict, which is all the precepts and principles by which monks are supposed to live their lives according to. And in Business Secrets of the Trappist, what I'm saying is that this creates a matrix by which the monks live the life. The most important thing you can do, Aristotle said, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence is not a choice, it's a habit. And if you want to become as successful as the monks have been, it has to become a way of life, a way that you live every single day of your life, whether you're in business, at home, or wherever you are. And this is what the Rule of Saint Benedict helps the monks to accomplish by, as I say, you know, institutionalizing this process into the monastic daily life.
August, let me get your thoughts on how we can bring some of these principles home. You talked about the missions of different organizations and their large, lofty, worthy goals. And oftentimes we look at our daily lives and say, well, gee, that's great. But, you know, for instance, this is a mountain time, town. This time of year, there's a lot of people out cycling in the mountains. And Larry, I'll share with you a story. There's a bike shop over by Silver Star area. And I heard the owner of the store telling one of his employees, you know what we sell here? And she said, you know, bikes, helmets. And he's like, no, we sell fun. That's our job. I just overheard that conversation. And I loved it. And your comment about this large mission made me think of that story as well. How can average everyday businesses make their mission larger and a worthy goal?
Well, there's a case study in my book about Truliant Federal Credit Union, and their mission is to have a positive, life-changing effect on people's lives. Now, this is a very high and lofty principle that could easily be dismissed as motherhood and fluff, as most people would. But when you go through the case study and you see how and the next thing is a result of that to become their preferred financial institution. And there's all these ways in which they do financial checkups, the way they take care of their customers, et cetera, that has made them into the most profitable credit union in the Southeast, the fastest growing. They came through the financial crisis unscathed when everybody else was going bankrupt. So, you know, their commitment, which is true and authentic, to selfless service has been tremendously beneficial to their bottom line. I also, on an individual level, I say, listen, I came up in sales, and every salesman knows that the more he forgets himself, forgets his product, forgets his quota, and forgets his commissions, and focuses instead on helping his customer, the more commissions he makes. When leaders focus on making other people successful, the promotions take care of themselves.
You know,
and when entire corporations fanatically focus on delighting customers, profits take care of themselves. Now, to take that back to a spiritual principle that the monks believe in, which is seek first the kingdom of heaven, and everything else will take care of itself. We have tremendous examples everywhere we want to look of people who put this into practice and end up becoming very successful as a result of it. But it takes a lot of faith for us to start living that way ourselves.
You know, and in your book, there's a reference, I believe, to Warren Buffett, and you say he operates like a Trappist monk. I just thought of him as kind of a big...
He talks a lot for a Trappist monk, though, don't you think?
I mean, talk about a maybe not a ruthless a businessman, but a capitalist to the core. But you say he's successful because he conducts business much like a Trappist monk would.
Right. I use it as an example. I say the Trappist monks are not successful, and Warren Buffett alike are not successful, despite the fact that they spend so much of their time worrying about integrity and doing the right thing. They're successful because they do. Warren Buffett, for example, is famous for what's called the Buffett discount. The Buffett discount means that Warren Buffett can usually buy a company from private owners for 10% less than they perhaps could get on the open market. Why? Because he has such an incredible reputation for treating people honestly, fairly, for not over-managing them, for not meddling, for being open, for having, you know, to being honest. All these things have translated into what's called the Buffett discount. And so he has worked fanatically. I read his biography a couple years ago, and the woman there said that, you know, when you talk to Buffett himself, he doesn't credit his success to Wharton Business School or even to his legendary mentor, Ben Graham. No, he says Dale Carnegie is the secret. And then she says something incredibly important, which comes back to our point about the role of St. Benedict. She said that, but the big difference about Warren, she said, is when he read back in the 1930s or whatever, when he read Dale Carnegie's books, he didn't just put it back on the shelf and say, wow, that was a good idea. No, she said he worked the system and worked the system and worked the system. And she said to this day, he still is working Dale Carnegie's system, which is very, very similar about putting other people's interests ahead of your own.
Yeah, we had.
And he credits all of his success to Dale Carnegie.
We had a fascinating conversation a couple months ago, Larry, if you remember Carol Loomis, who was the author of that biography. Buffett's a fascinating man. I want to take you back to your comment just before we started talking about Buffett, where you were talking about faith, right? I think you're mentioned seek first the kingdom of God and everything else will happen after that. And that does take a lot of faith. And how does you've got another quote in your book that talks about that the Trappist monks don't just make success happen, but they let success happen. And that's I'm almost 50 years old now. That's one of the subtle things I've learned in life as I get older. You can only control so much. And at some point you have to have faith. And it's one of the things as a father to two young girls I try to teach them is the importance of faith, not just spiritual faith, but just in the faith that if you live your life the right way, if you work hard, good things are going to happen. It may not be what you thought was going to happen, but good things are going to happen. Can you talk about the role of faith in creating a good business?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I wish I'd had you as a co-writer. She just summed up so perfectly a lot of the things that I'm trying to get across.
And maybe you guys could work on a sequel.
First of all, this whole idea of letting success happen is not necessarily just a religious concept. I play golf or try to play golf, and I hear guys saying all the time, the secret to a good round of golf is just let the hole get in the way of the ball. We have a million expressions in the English language where we understand that there comes a time to let it happen rather than make it happen. And when I talk about faith in my book, I make a distinction between the typical ways in which people think about faith. Was Mary a virgin or not? Then, you know, if you say, yes, she was a virgin and she had a baby anyway, you know, that's a faith in a proposition. And I say that what really distinguishes the monks is they live faithfully in a faithful fashion, which is what you just alluded to. It's the way we live our lives. As you started in the very beginning of the show saying, we must live life forward and only understand it backwards. And it takes so whether we like it or not, it is always going to be, to some extent, a journey into the unknown. And you have to live faithfully that in ways that you can't possibly imagine, if you just do the right thing constantly, and especially when you're under pressure, that good things happen to good people. And it will come back to you in so many ways that you can't possibly imagine. This whole way in which my book came, I illustrated the way my book came about, the way I've got my opportunity to write for Forbes.com, the essay prize that I won with the Templeton Foundation. All of this emerged from me originally going to the monastery and just faithfully putting my time in there, working as a monastic guest, which is last week, when I was there over Christmas, I spent 3 weeks as a janitor mopping floors. You know, you just faithfully. And so I had no way of knowing that I would be called at some point in time to write about all this. I was a business guy. I didn't write things. I talk. I'm a salesman.
Well, August, so, we We thank you for sharing your story with us this morning. This has been a fascinating conversation. I'd love to chat with you at length. Even more, unfortunately, we've got to start wrapping up. Our guest, August Turek, he's the author of The Business Secrets of Trappist Monks, One CEO's Quest for Meaning and Authenticity. August, thanks for joining us this morning.
I loved it. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you, August. And looking ahead to today, it's blue skies and a little bit partly cloudy. And I saw a sundog yesterday. You know what a sundog is?
I was just going to ask, what is a sundog?
A sundog is when there's moisture in the air and the sun shines through it and creates not a rainbow. It doesn't look anything like a rainbow, but it's all the colors of the rainbow up in a cloud in just kind of a undefined shape, not a bow at all.
Interesting.
But in Indian times, the Indian lore is that once you see a sundog, it will rain within 24 hours. So,
hope the Indians are wrong.
having said all that, today we have a 30% chance of scattered thunderstorms, and that 30% chance carries all the way through Wednesday night. So beware the sundog. And the highs will be in the low to mid 80s for that same time period. And we will be back. Now we're going to do some baby talk next. We're going to talk first about a clothing store for or online site for kids' clothes and shoes, and follow that up with kids' entertainment and a couple of moms in Park City who have an idea to keep moms and dads fed with craft projects, all on Mountain Money after this.
Park City Realty Group is proud to support KPCW. Park City Realty Group has provided real estate services to buyers and sellers since 2005. Our team shares local knowledge and insight with clients who value the Park City lifestyle. Knowledge plus hard work equals success. 649-1991 or parkcityrealtygroup.com.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members enjoy a wide array of benefits, including instant credibility, weekly newsletters with relevant information, educational seminars, webinars, and much more. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Money. We just heard from August Turek, the author of The Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks. Larry, that was really fascinating. I could have talked to him for a long time.
And you know, I don't generally read too many of the books, but now that I've heard him, I'm going to do more than skim, which is what I did the first time around.
So. Right. No, lots of great quotes. And we're gonna shift gears now. We have Naomi Doyle in studio with us. She's the founder of Caden Company. And Naomi, you just had a busy weekend at the Kimball Arts Center,
yes.
Or Kimball Arts Festival. Tell us what Caden Company does.
Caden Company is 10 years old, and I make handcrafted leather baby shoes for up to 3 years. My focus is on infant shoes when they're learning to walk. The soft sole shoe is the best for the babies, so I wanted to create a quality product to fill that niche.
So does this mean you're home sewing every one of these?
I literally, yes, am home sewing every pair of shoes myself, yes.
Wow.
So yeah. These are not contracted out to some foreign manufacturer?
No, I work out of my home studio in Park City.
Okay, great. And how many pairs? So I know for in my case, my family, I think we got a pair of shoes for each of my daughters when they got baptized.
Right.
And outside of that, my memory, it's been a while now, but my memory is they walked around barefoot for quite a long time.
Right.
How many pairs of shoes does the average customer buy for their children? Am I normal or do most people buy several pairs of shoes?
You're not
normal. It really depends. You don't need to have anything on their feet except to keep them warm when they're babies up to, 6 months. But then they start crawling around and moving and pulling themselves up. And from what I've heard from pediatricians, it's good to have their feet obviously protected in a soft sole, not a hard sole.
Right.
So the key market is like the 6 to 12 month age when they need their feet protected, but they still want to feel the ground.
And is that the niche you fill? Is that the manufacturers of children's shoes make a baby version of an adult shoe, which has a hard sole?
Yeah, and from all the research out there that I've seen, it's not beneficial to have them in a hard sole until they are walking on, you know, on stable surfaces and all that. For their development, it's good to have them in a soft sole. So the 6 to 12-month size is popular. And then when the children get older, the soft sole still is great, and it works well inside as nonstick on tile and wood surfaces.
So it sounds like the shoes are your core product. I went to your website. I saw you also have clothing for,
yes,
for children
as
well.
Yes, I do clothing. I've been doing the clothing, 100% cotton, U.S.-grown cotton clothing. That is shifting a little bit for me, and I'm trying to narrow my focus back into the shoes moving forward.
And are you hand sewing the clothing as well?
No, the clothing has been sewn in Pennsylvania out of a company that's now out of business. They just recently shut their factory after 120 years due to the prices of cotton increasing.
Right.
So it's not at all, it wasn't profitable for them to stay open after all that time. And for me to continue on the cotton, it's also not profitable to continue that way. I have quite a bit of inventory that I'm, you know, selling now that I already have purchased and sewn. So I do have the clothing available. But moving forward, I want to focus more on the handcrafted leather shoes.
And is that just because it's more of a niche? You don't have as much competition there? Is that the?
I feel like the shoes out there are, everything's kind of moved overseas, and the quality shoes that I used to purchase for my own kids before I started my own company were made, say, in Canada out of leather. And now I really don't see anything that's really nicely made and really high quality out of leather for babies. And so I'm trying to fill that niche for more of an artisan type of shoe rather than a mass market kind of product.
So how did this start as a business? Did it just start as you making shoes for your kids and your friends' kids? And at what point did this become a business?
That's a good question. After I had my second son, I was running marathons and spent a lot of time pushing him in the jogger and looking at his little feet, and we'd lose a shoe here and lose a shoe there. And I'd recently worked for a design company that had been sold, so I was just being a mom, which I thought was a great idea, but I'm so crafty, I wanted to do something else. And looking at his little feet, I thought, I'm going to do shoes. So I literally went and got upholstery fabric or leather samples to make shoes up and started experimenting that way.
Well, I've got a question for you, but what you just said, I want to clarify here. Did you say you ran an entire marathon pushing your son?
No.
In this
room? Oh,
okay.
I trained.
Okay. I was like, wow, you really are a superman.
No.
All right. So here's my question. I went to your website, and I saw you're not only available in stores here locally.
Right.
But your products are available in California, Oregon, Maine, as well as several retailers in Utah. And distribution is key for any success. We're a business show. How did that process work? How did you get the relationships with the stores? Like, you're in the Grand America stores here locally. You're in Canyon Sports.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult is it to get that distribution? Because I would assume that's key to your sales and your growth.
Exactly. It is. It's been a little bit of a difficult process for me because I like the customers to just come to me at
right.
the booth at
we
the
all
Arts
do.
Fest and throw money at me and tell me I'm wonderful. So it's a little bit of a challenge for me to get out there and promote myself. So that's something I'm currently trying to succeed at. And basically, some of them are word of mouth. People have contacted me. The Maine, it's Sugarloaf, they contacted me. They saw my ski shoes I do that are quite popular, and they recognize that the little mountain in them looks very much like their logo. So they had me fine-tune it to actually have their logo in it, and they bought quite a few shoes for a few years over at their store at Sugarloaf, which I was excited about.
Right.
And recently Sun Valley contacted me. They had seen my shoes at the Grand America, and she ordered quite a few shoes that also have the Sun Valley, either the SV on it or, you know, the ski-related shoes for their store. So they just received them a couple weeks ago. So that is something, and that's something I want to expand on, doing more wholesale.
Well, now, at some point, you can't sew all these, can you? If you keep getting big orders and so on, I mean, would you ever enlist others or go to a factory if you could find one still in business?
Yeah,
or is it always going to be a mom at home business?
Well, I'm working on that. That's something I'm kind of waiting to happen, where I have so many orders I can't fill them, so it's going to force my hand to explore those options. I want to keep everything in America. That's my goal, and to have it a handcrafted product. So I would like to, moving forward, when I get to that point, hire some people, hopefully a local, locally right here in Utah, to help me sew the product and be just right there on hand, so I can keep the quality and control and everything like that. I'm like to keep a really high-end product and not change it that way.
Yeah, and you're also online. Are people discovering you online?
Yes, and that's been nice. I hand out my business cards, and I do try and promote myself and my website at kateandco.com, and I do have a few sales online weekly, which is nice, and I really would like to expand that as well.
I'm just trying to get my arms around you sitting at home sewing of these shoes.
So how long
does it take to turn out a pair of shoes? Is that a trade secret?
That's a trade secret. People ask me that all the time, and generally I just tell them I can do a pair of shoes in under an hour is what I say. And I don't just sit and sew generally a pair of shoes. I usually do like a dozen or so at once. So it's cut everything and line it all up and kind of do it in pieces.
And then at the Kimball's Arts Festival, how important is that to your business? That's obviously a big local event here. I was gone this weekend, so I don't know how big the crowds were, but they're typically quite big.
Yes.
Is that a core part of your business that introduces you to a wider audience?
That is a core part of my business, and it's a great way for me to spread the word, pass out my business card, and people from out of state visiting then can order from me later and then tell their friends. And so I love doing the Arts Fest. It's a really great place to meet other artists and see what they're doing.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for joining us. The company is Cade & Co. And so how is that spelled online if they want to see what listeners want to see?
Well, thank you. It's Cade, CADEANDCO, CadeAndCo.com.
Okay. Who's Cade?
My son. I have a Caden and a Colin, and I made the name up from Cade and Coco, because Colin used to be Coco. He's now 16, however.
He doesn't like being called Coco anymore.
We don't call him Coco anymore, but he gave me a good name.
Well, thanks very much for joining us.
All right, thank you.
And we'll be back to talk with Amy McGar and Anna Francis, who have another fun business for kids, Fun Craft Mom. Mountain Money continues after this.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Tune in to KPCW every Tuesday morning at 9 to hear This Green Earth.
We'll cover environmental issues from local to global, from snowpack to giant squid,
geothermal energy to gray wolves,
and honeybees to sustainable chocolate. Brought to you by Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough,
Republic Services,
Habitat for Humanities Restore,
and Rocky Mountain Power.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. We just had a conversation with Naomi Doyle. She's the founder of Caden Company. And in studio with us now is Amy McGar and Anna Francis. They've also started their own company. It's kind of a monthly subscription. I mentioned in the opening the Beer of the Month Club, the Wine of the Month Club.
Yeah,
but this
they
has
might
nothing,
not appreciate those analogies.
This has nothing. This has nothing to do with alcohol. Tell us about your business.
Well, our business is crafting for preschoolers, 3 to 7 year olds. And what we do is we sell a box of craft supplies, and we provide you daily with craft instructions. So you go to our website, craftyfunmom.com, and we will tell you exactly what to get out of your box to do a craft with your child every day, 20 crafts a month.
It's kind of crafting for dummies.
Not to dumb it down,
but yeah.
Crafting for dummies, huh? Yeah. I have to change the name.
We'll tell you exactly what to do.
I stayed at home for a year with my daughter when she was 18 months old. And so you can imagine me going in. I was your quintessential customer, going into Michael's. My daughter wanted to do crafts. I didn't know what to buy. So I would have loved to have found a site like yours. So how'd you come up with the idea?
Well, I'll tell you exactly the same thing. I've been a teacher for 20 years, a lot of that time in kindergarten, so I know these little crafts. And 4 years ago, I had my daughter, Taylor, and wanted to spend time crafting and doing things with her. And so I'd get out my books, and I would look at it, and I'd say, what a great idea. And then I'd think, oh, I don't have pipe cleaners, or I don't have googly eyes. Oh, well, we'll do it tomorrow. And so I thought, if I'm having troubles, surely other people are too. And so Anna and I, at one point, went to our local craft store, and we took 20 crafts that we were going to do, and it took us over an hour and a half to find all the things that we needed for 20 crafts. And we thought, whoa. What if we put it in a box?
And we spent a lot of money. So this way, ordering it in a subscription, in a monthly subscription, it really equals out to $1.70 a craft, $1.50 if you do an annual subscription. So it saves you a lot of money rather than going to the store, you know, to get the crafts.
Well, and you would count everything out so you get just what you need, so you don't end up with a closet full of extra googly eyes and pipe cleaners.
Right. I still have right. googly eyes from 10 years ago. We got so many of those.
That is so true because it's organization too. Little kids come with a lot of stuff. Yeah. So not having too much stuff is a nice thing.
Give you exactly what you need and you don't end up with 1,000 googly eyes.
And so you guys started your business this year, right, 2013.
We did.
And how's it going? Are you growing more quickly than you thought? Is it going a little more slowly?
It's still getting the word out. People that hear the idea love it, or like yourself, thought they could have used it or
Absolutely.
Wanted it. And so it's really just about getting the word out, and it's growing. People love the idea, and doing community events and social network has been great.
And you guys sent in a press release here, and mm-hmm. we saw it and said, hey, let's have you guys come in and talk. How else are you getting the word out?
We've been on KSL. We did their browser 5.0 edition, and we'll be on again for their news at noon. Social media, again, has been great. We're posting things on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest, and people like the pictures, so they'll go to our website.
Right.
And then just being on the internet. We've done some community events, Power Hour through the Basin Rec, and doing little crafting parties for kids.
So has this all just progressed naturally, or did you two sit down and write a business plan and do all the traditional things that a startup business does?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. Our first business plan was written on a napkin, and we wish we still had that one, but we have worked on it since then. But actually, Anna and I worked in a kindergarten class at Parley's Park last year together, and we found that we work very well together. And so we're just you know, plugging away every day, learning something new. So it's been...
Well, on your website, which I really like, it's very personal. You guys talk about your favorite crafts, and I think it was you that talked about your favorite craft being the reindeer at Christmas time.
Right.
You know, I remember doing that as a kid, and I remember when my daughter came home with her reindeer where the body's made out of the foot, you know, the trace of the foot.
Right.
And, you know, these are such memorable items. Mm-hmm. You talked about doing ornaments with your mom for Christmas time and just the memories that are associated with crafts. Mm-hmm. They're very powerful, and they don't cost a lot.
Right. And it's the time. It's spending time with your little ones. They grow up really fast. And just, you know, I find that if I work, you know, 20 minutes with my little girl every day, I can get my other things done because she's kind of been filled up a little bit mm-hmm. with time.
And that's really where I think this is such a great niche, too, is that moms are working, dads are working, nobody's got enough time, quality time to spend with your kids. And like you say, the stuff's all there and the instructions, so you can just do the fun part, not the prep part.
Exactly.
Right. When I, again, on your website, I looked at, you know, the materials that come, and the picture I saw had like the paint brushes. It literally has everything that you need. It's not just the paint and the, oh, shoot, I don't have paint brushes at home. I got to run to Michael's to get them.
We don't assume you have anything, so we put everything
That's a
in
good
there.
Assumption yeah. for
you,
most of
that
us.
You need, yeah, because even living up here when the weather isn't great and you don't want to go out, you just want to get out the crafts for the kids and do it. We put everything in there that you need.
And I think you're going to find, I like the subscription model, right? There's, I mentioned earlier, some of the other club of the month type things. The nice thing is once you build that relationship with a client, you have them as a customer probably for several years.
Yeah.
So you're not constantly building and having to sell to new customers. You've got people coming back.
However, also, Doug, these kids are going to outgrow wanting to glue popsicle sticks and googly eyes together. Mm-hmm. So you
it's
have
still
to
pretty
have,
fun for me, Larry.
you still have to have a constant feed of new kids, I presume. So I presume when one outgrows it, they've got a little brother or sister, and mm-hmm. and but that doesn't carry on to infinity. So are you? Going to stick with this age group? Is there anything you can do for older kids? Or well, do they outgrow arts and crafts? At what age do they outgrow yeah. arts and crafts?
Well, you know, our target is 3 to 7-year-olds, but we've had older kids do the same thing. They like it. It's just and they just mold it into something a little different. But luckily, kids are being born every day, so that's we're probably yeah. not going to run out of 3 to 7-year-olds anytime soon.
It's,
so
it's an interesting question, though, because it's you do have this audience that you've developed a relationship with, and you have time to think about this. But one thing is, you know, what do you do as the kids outgrow mm-hmm. so that you don't lose them as a customer?
That is a good question. Mm-hmm.
And you have time to think about how you do that. But I'm right. sure there's something right. there that for 10-year-olds. The other thing I like, you mentioned on your website about doing something with your kids that doesn't involve technology. Mm-hmm. And the problem is technology is so easy for us all to use, right? A lot of us have smartphones or an iPad, and you can just give it to your kid, and it's loaded with games that you got for free online. Mm-hmm. But then you're not creating memories with your kids.
Exactly. That's exactly what we're thinking.
And there's a lot of personality in those crafts they make. You can see their personality. You can hang it on the wall. You can rotate it with other crafts they're doing. And so it's nice for them to see a piece of artwork that they've done in a frame on your wall or up on the fridge.
Well, and your teachers, too. So is this just a parent-child bonding experience to do crafts, or is there some learning?
There is definitely some learning.
Because you do some themes, right? It's mm-hmm. these aren't just random glue things together projects. It's thematic.
Right. Each month has a different theme. This month we have oceans. Next month will be apples. But, you know, every month we try to include lacing, fine motor skills, a lot of math, pre-math skills. So we're really trying to incorporate a lot of those types of things.
Well, that brings
our crafts.
That brings up an interesting point. You guys have both taught in the kindergarten classroom, and I know when my kids were that age, I'd go into the classroom, and I forget what the law is in Utah. Is it 20 kids, 18 kids in a kindergarten class?
Unfortunately, there's not really a law.
Oh, really? I thought no. there was that limited the
well,
size.
Well, I mean, they're I don't know if it's come to be. Nana and I worked together. We had quite a few more than 20, but
okay.
Yeah.
Well, here's the point. You go into the classroom, and I had, when my kids were that age, I had trouble getting them to sit still and pay attention for 20 minutes. And you go into the classroom, and here's 25-year-old kids all sitting there listening to the teacher. Mm-hmm. So what's you've got an audience here. What's the secret to getting your kids to sit still, to pay attention for that period of time? How do kindergarten teachers do it?
I will tell you that I am a really good manager of children, very good manager of children. And with my own, it's a whole nother ball game. So I don't know.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think in classrooms, sorry, teachers, I'm giving away the secret, but it's the power of the group. You know, the power of everyone is doing the same thing, and right. there's that power. And it's also a respect for the teacher a lot of times, like, oh, I want her not to, you know, I'm going to be my best. But with moms and dads, it's where they're the most comfortable. You know, they can kind of let loose.
Right.
So
and
if
boy,
they're letting
they.
loose, yeah, if they're letting loose, that just means they love you so much. So
Here's one I learned because I do a presentation to third graders in Park City every year. And when they get a little rambunctious and distracted, the teacher claps her hands. 1, 2, 3, eyes on me.
Well, that works.
Yep, I remember
that
too.
That's probably every teacher's method. But
it's in the toolbox.
All the kids know it. Yeah, right. They'll respond to that.
But it works.
Well, on that note, tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you.
They just need to go to craftyfunmom.com, and everything is explained there. We even have an organizational kit that we've handmade. My husband actually handmade
that, yeah.
And we had him do it exactly what we needed for paper and all of the supplies.
It's kind of a Bob the Builder type box.
Exactly.
It's clever. Yes. Well, thank you for joining us. Our guest, Amy McGarr and Anna Francis. They are the founders of Crafty Fun Moms that you can find on craftyfunmom.com. Thank you for coming in.
Is it craftyfunmom.com or funcraftmom?
Craftyfunmom.
Crafty okay. It's a great URL. If Larry and I didn't confuse everybody.
Craftyfunmom.
Okay, we got it. craftyfunmom.com.
And we wish you all the success. It's a great idea.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Mound Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment.
Local programming all day, only in Park City, only on KPCW. 91.9 FM in Park City and the Heber Valley, 88.1 FM in Colville and Camas. Welcome back to the final minutes of Mountain Money. And, Doug, I wanted listeners to know this such a fascinating subject, August Turek's book, Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks. And there's a Trappist monastery in Utah, and the public can visit it. And my family's visited it several times, and it's really very interesting. The one here is just outside of Huntsville, which is east of Ogden in the Ogden Valley, only about a one-hour drive from here. And they have a website, so you can find out when they're doing Vespers. They do the chanting and prayer, and it's really fascinating to attend.
Also, you were saying earlier in the green room, they make honey is what their mission is.
Yeah, and they have a business because they have to support themselves. So they have a farm, and they have clover, and they make they're famous for their creamed honeys. And they are – so they've got a little store, and they sell St. Christopher medals and religious books, but mostly people make a beeline – if I can say that, to the Abbey of Our Lady of the Holy Trinity for the creamed honey, and it is fabulous.
Yeah, you know, August was really a thoughtful guest. I really enjoyed chatting with him. Like I said, I could have probably spent the whole hour talking to him. He mentioned briefly that he won that Templeton essay contest. He was very humble on that. That's a big deal. That's a nationwide contest, and it's every year. The essay's on what is the meaning of life. And there's a $100,000 prize for the winner. So that was a big accomplishment for him.
Indeed. So just look up Huntsville Abbey if you Google it and head on up there. It's interesting. And Doug, you take a vacation every year that's just fascinating. And you could talk an hour on this or more, and we have about a minute.
45 seconds. Yeah, it's up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and you wouldn't think that you could have one of your best vacations the whole year there, but it's the largest air show in the world. It's bigger than the Paris Air Show, and this year I went up with Savannah, who's here Saturday mornings with Monica on the Classified Show. And this air show has a radio station there, and Savannah was doing some interviews with some big stars, including the director and the producer of the movie that's coming out this weekend, the Disney film, Planes. So it was a big to-do there. She had a lot of fun doing it there. I emailed it in to you, Larry, and to Leslie. Maybe they'll get a chance to play it on the air sometime before opening night on Friday.
Well, now the pressure's on. We'll find a slot for it.
Dad did that on purpose.
But it's the Experimental Aircraft Association Fly-In, and So lots of interesting, different planes you don't see.
It is. And, you know, it's the flip side experience for me here. We're a small town. Sundance comes in. It's very crowded. And Oshkosh is a small town. And EAA comes in, and it's very crowded. So it's nice to be on the other side of that equation.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank our great guests this morning, August Turak with this book, Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, Naomi Doyle, and Amy McGar and Anna Francis. Thanks all for joining us. And thanks to our great sponsors, Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, San Francisco Design, the Park City Chamber, and Prudential Real Estate, heading for a high of 85 today with a 30% chance of thunderstorms. And it is time now for NPR. This is KPCW Park City.